As we said last week, evolution is being touted as a science. Read the textbooks, read the media, listen to the movies. It's everywhere. It's being touted as science, and yet what it fails to live up to is actual science, real science. We looked at the definition last week of science, and it has nothing to do with the actual definition of evolution by what it promotes or what it purports to say there. And then we looked at the scientific method, which fails to support or defend the theory of evolution. So, the belief that the world is created by an intelligent and sovereign being is being scorned as religious faith, and yet any belief in how the world began requires faith because nobody saw it happen. And the fact that no one saw it happen means that no matter what theory or idea or belief you have, it has to be by faith, no matter what it is, because you weren't there to see it, no one was there to see it. So the real question comes down to, which faith are you going to believe in? Which faith are you going to embrace? It's not a question of, well, we weren't there to see it. We already established that, and we know that. The question is, which theory or which faith are you going to go with here? So evolutionists, and when I say evolutionists, I'm really talking about the published evolutionists, those who are academically trying to defend their work. The evolutionists are fond of pitting Christians against science as if we have to choose between the two. But as I said last week, that's a false dilemma. Not only is it possible to believe in God and science at the same time, but it's also a rational conclusion based upon the evidence that has been provided. Even belief in miracles is rational and logical if indeed sufficient evidence exists that the miracle did indeed happen. So think about that. I mean, creation itself is a miracle. And so when we talk about the creation that God brought into existence, we are talking about a miraculous act. And yet, do we have evidence for that, to support that miraculous act and the God who did that, who was capable of doing that? Well, that's not mine to decide for you, although I do say that there is sufficient physical evidence, moral evidence, and biblical evidence to defend that, far more so than there would be for any kind of evolutionary theory. And I said that evolution is a dogma, not a science, and that a dogma is a point of view that is put forward as authoritative, yet without adequate grounds to support it. I personally do not oppose evolution because I am against science. Actually, I'm a fan of science, even though I don't understand it all, okay? I love science, and I think it's a great thing that we have the ability to understand science. I oppose evolution because it's never been proved scientifically. Even worse, it makes claims that cannot be true but pretends that they are. Evolution masquerades as the truth, and when in fact it can't defend that claim. And here's something to think about, just some statements here of something cannot be true if, well, and there you go, if it defies what is naturally seen and expected over the course of all known human history, well, then it can't be true. And you say, well, it could start now. Well, that would define a new truth that we've never seen before, and we would probably call that a miracle, right, if something like that happened. Or it defies objective logic and reasoning, or if it was without relevant and specific evidence. And I use the words relevant and specific on purpose because the evolutionist will open up his box of skulls and bones and rocks and say, well, see, this proves evolution. No, that's not relevant, and that's not specific. Okay, those are just bones and rocks. That doesn't mean evolution happened. It just means you think it happened and you think that evolution caused these things to happen. That's a different story. Okay, it violates known natural laws, which I'll get into a little bit this evening. It assumes a different set of laws only to accommodate a desired outcome. In other words, it basically says, well, at the time of, say, the Big Bang, there were different laws in action at that time, and they've since changed to, you know, the present-day laws. And I think, well, that's creative storytelling. That's very convenient. But where's your proof? I mean, what in the world do you have, literally? What in the world do you have to substantiate such a claim? It only is there because you need it desperately to accommodate a theory. It defies what God said and has proved is true. And then finally, it claims simply to be something that it is not. Okay, so there's some statements that we can throw out right from the beginning. Our lesson is called 10 Lies of Evolution. The lies are statements that evolution has to make that are not true because it goes against what the basis is for truth. It's not just something that Chad's got to rant and he's going to, you know, give this angry tirade and go, I'm against all these things because, you know, they make me upset. Well, regardless if they make me upset or not, that's not the point. The point is there's truth and then there's evolution. And we have this huge chasm between the two. Now, I want to make it really clear before we go forward. Not everyone who believes in evolution is automatically a liar or is lying. And once again, when I talk about evolutionists, I'm usually referring, in the context of my statements, to those who are published defenders of that faith, so to speak, okay? And so what we're looking at is a belief system. It's kind of like when we talk about denominationalism. When I talk about that, I'm not talking about and critiquing or even condemning every single person caught up in that system. I'm talking about the system. The system is unbiblical. Where everyone stands is another subject, another discussion, but the system is unbiblical. Same with this. When I talk about evolution, I'm talking about the system. The system is untenable. It's not logical. It's certainly not scientific. And that's a big statement there to make for this lesson. We're looking at this and saying, is this dogma or can it possibly be scientific? Many people, especially in religion, as you know, embrace false beliefs out of ignorance, out of prejudice, out of pride, out of indoctrination, and other poor methods of reasoning. So just because this happens outside of religion shouldn't surprise us here, okay? So this lesson is not a mudslinging thing. This is really a reasoned rebuttal of the claims of an untested and unproved theory called evolution. Now let's get into it. One of the primary fundamental premises of evolution is that something comes from nothing. And yet, we have never seen this happen. We never expect to see this happen. We have no reputable record of ever having seen it happen or having it happen in all of human history. Nature, which is evolutionist's primary god, cannot explain such a bizarre situation, and it offers zero evidence that it ever happened. And yet this is exactly what is absolutely critical, absolutely necessary in order for evolution to work. Something must have come from nothing. Not only that, but this something had to come from nothing for no reason and without purpose and by mindless, undefined, unintelligent, impersonal, blind forces of nature, which also, by the way, had to come from nothing. Next time your evolutionary friends say, well, there's blind forces of nature, you say, where did the blind forces of nature come from? And just see what they say. I'd be interested in knowing, because nobody ever explains that. The textbooks, the Discover Channel, you know, no one ever sits back and says, you know what, we should probably offer where these blind forces of nature come from, because they also came from nothing. The Big Bang Theory, which most of us know, that the universe, according to evolutionary theory, was at one time an immensely condensed ball of energy and matter, and then it inexplicably exploded, and then almost immediately began forming the known universe here. It assumes one of two scenarios, neither which is provable. First of all, it says that this is the first scenario it proposes. All physical matter in the universe is eternal. That means that it always has existed. And that begs a question immediately, how did that happen and why? The second law of thermodynamics says that matter is not eternal. In fact, matter always is in a declining mode, so to speak. It is always deteriorating from its initial state. So whatever you see in the universe now, as far as mass or material form, is always in a state of deterioration. Look at the law of entropy as well, and you'll see more of what I'm talking about. In other words, that's just an impossible scenario to defend. By science, it's an impossible scenario to defend, scientifically. In the Big Bang scenario, raw energy automatically and systematically willed itself into tangible matter or mass without any outside agency. In other words, without any supernatural help. By definition, that is a miracle without explanation. In other words, a miracle occurred, but no one's being given credit for the miracle except, yes, blind forces of nature. And again, we are left to wonder where these blind forces of nature came from and then how they got the power to produce miracles when they're blind and impersonal and have no plan or blueprint or anything else. Thus, something that did not exist before in kind, in form, in composition, or in function came into being. In other words, it proposes that nothing becomes something for no reason at all. And that is touted as science. That's not science. That's not logical. That's not rational. And yet that's what's being crammed down our throats in the public eye, in the public venue there, as being truth. The second scenario that it proposes is that all energy and matter just popped into existence inexplicably, and we just assume this to be true without any evidence, without any proof, or without good reason. Some, again, published evolutionists are fond of saying something to this effect, and I have read this, so I'm not making this up or exaggerating, something to the effect of evolution does not pretend to answer the question of where original matter came from, only what happened after the Big Bang. To which I say, that is extremely convenient, but completely evades the real question of how did that all happen? When we talk about scientific, surely as from a scientific point of view, we should be able to understand the processes intelligently and, yes, scientifically, and have a scientific method of explanation. That's what it's all about. That's scientific method in itself. And here we have no method, we just have a starting point that we randomly, arbitrarily made up. We plucked it out of thin air and said, well, this is where we're going to start, and evolution took over from there, and there you go. And again, this is being touted as science and truth, and that is just not the case. And it never asks the question, or certainly doesn't answer the question of how and why did that happen. In contrast, the Bible states that God is the creator, and that God, as the creator, is the source of everything that exists. You see on the screen there, he provides the raw material. He also provides the power to turn that energy into matter. By the way, it takes energy to turn energy into matter. Energy outside of what's being turned into matter. It takes other energy to do that. If you have all the energy in the universe altogether, where is the energy that is being used to turn that energy into matter? You're saying, I'm scratching my head right now, and I'm about ready to explode. Okay, well, maybe we got a little deep there, but you see what I'm saying. It just doesn't make sense. And he also provided the intelligence to do this, taking that energy, producing matter from that, in whatever way he did it. It was productive, it was effective, and it was efficient. And that's the God that we see in the Bible. And all of this to magnify his glory and to compel human beings, the highest of his creation, to know their creator is an intelligent and supreme being. And some say, well, you just made up your own starting point. You said God is your starting point. You just kind of went from there. Well, let me answer that. First of all, I didn't make it up. God is the starting point, regardless of whether I believe it or not. And secondly, the physical world necessarily requires such a being in order to have brought it into existence. And thirdly, the Bible confirms that being and defines who that being is that we're speaking of. So yes, we are using God as our starting point, but not only because God says so, but even outside of the Bible, because the evidence says so. That is a rational and intelligent conclusion, not a religious one. We don't need to apply science and physics to God, since God is above these things. He created those things. And again, that is a rational conclusion based upon the evidence to hold that view. All right, I spent a lot of time on that one because that's a primary one, and that's really what it all comes back to. Let's look at a couple others here. Life comes from non-living sources. You know that in the Dark Ages, people saw something that they could not explain intelligently, but they actually explained it miraculously. If you left a steak out overnight or for a couple days there, maggots and then flies would miraculously appear on the steak, and they called that spontaneous generation, life coming from non-life. And we've since debunked that theory. Louis Pasteur and others have looked at this and said, no, that's not what's going on. There's actually microbial action going on, and that's what's generating that life, and so on. But what's happening in our present age, our modern age, is evolution reverts back to that kind of thinking. According to evolution, all life, microbial, insect, fish, bird, land animal, and even man himself, spontaneously generated from non-living sources, namely space dust and chemical elements, which also appeared without explanation in the theory. So the claim is that we began at the most rudimentary level at a single-celled organism, and then we kept evolving over eons of time into something increasingly complex and diverse. And regardless of what you think about that, it doesn't change the original premise that at some time in history, a non-living thing inexplicably became a living thing, a living organism. An organism that is comprised of cellular organization. And by the way, in any organization, all cells of the organism have a unified goal. In other words, all those cells are working together for a unified goal, the survival of that organism. And not only the survival, but also the reproduction of that organism. So it's not a simple thing, you know, and if you think that, well, a single-cell organism, that's pretty simple. Oh, yeah, go try to make one. And just see how difficult. And don't say, well, I've got all these protoplasm and all these other things I'll just throw together. No, start from scratch. You've got nothing. Here's a pile of dust. Now make a single-celled living organism from that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. But that's what scientists and evolutionists are saying. That's exactly what happened. So we have a cellular organism with diverse cellular structure and all for a unified goal. It has eating and digesting. It has metabolism. It has growth. It has reproduction. Those are all indications of life. That's what life is, scientifically defined. And yet we have a scientifically inept answer for how that life came to be. This is not science, what is being offered us. It is science fiction. The law of biogenesis says that life comes from life. It cannot will itself into existence, and it cannot just appear spontaneously. If human beings cannot create life, then how in the world can blind forces of nature create life? Just think about that for a minute. Sir Fred Hoyle, a prominent British scientist, likened the accidental creation of life to having an enormous group of blind men, the size of which is 10 to the 50th power. That's one followed by 50 zeros, that size of group, simultaneously solving scrambled Rubik's cubes. Think about what we just said. What he just said was that's impossible. And that's what he was getting at, is that if you look at the astronomical odds and statistics, it gets beyond just astronomical. It gets into the impossible. It just cannot happen. Quite literally, to assume that life came from non-life is to believe in a miracle. It is miraculous. Because it doesn't happen naturally. We've never seen it happen in nature. No one's ever expecting it to happen in nature. We've never observed it. We've never expected it. It requires supernatural intervention and thus a supernatural being. If you're going to have a miracle, you need a miracle worker. You can't go around talking about miracles without a miracle worker. And earthly life turning into existing life is, I'm just going to skip that point here. In contrast, God did bring forth all life on earth from non-living material by the power and authority that he possesses as creator. I want to just put a couple verses up here that out of Genesis, the creation account here. It says, then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living being. All right, you say, well, that's a miracle. I'm not arguing whatsoever. It most certainly is. But notice we also have a miracle worker, someone that we can go to in as a reference and say, well, we do have a reason why that miracle occurred, and we have a being who is capable of producing such an act. Goes on to say in verse 19, out of the ground the Lord God formed every beast of the field, every bird of the sky, and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. Again, we have life coming from non-life in this case as well. But it's not scientific, and we're not trying to say that it is. We're saying that it's miraculous. We're saying it's miraculous because we have a miracle worker, God the Creator, who is producing these miracles by the power that he possesses as the miracle worker. You're saying, well, where's the science in that? The science is that that miracle worker produced the science necessary for that to continue to happen in a natural way through natural procreation and reproduction. And also for us to be intelligent enough to understand what science is and to recognize it and to actually use it for our benefit. Someone says, well, that takes a lot of faith, therefore it's irrational. Well, it does take faith, of course, because we didn't see that happen, and all origins require faith. But it takes far more faith to believe that dust and chemical elements eventually turned into human beings than it does for that. If you think about that, faith without evidence, by the way, is blind faith. Here's another point. Order comes from non-order or from chaos. One of the remarkable observations of the physical universe is its orderliness. It is so precise, it is so well organized, fine-tuned, some people say, that we can depend upon its physical laws for travel to the moon and even through space. By the way, as a curious point here, the New Horizons space probe was launched in 2006. And on schedule, it will fly by Pluto and give us pictures of Pluto and its moon in 2 days, July 14th, 2015. Keep in mind that this is some 3 billion miles away. They are so able to use the physical laws of our solar system and our universe to their advantage that they can send a space probe to an object 3 billion miles away, meet up with it, take pictures, send information back. All by accident, right? Oh no. There's order there. The point I'm making here, though, is where did all that order and organization and laws come from? Because laws cannot just appear and will themselves into existence. They just don't do that. Imagine the audacity even of laws doing that, blind forces of nature, just popping new laws into existence. Imagine getting the newspaper tomorrow and the front page says, new natural law in existence, and here it is, and we're all going, oh, now we all have to adjust, because we are all used to the old natural laws, and now here's a new one. And you say, well, where'd that come from? Who made that? It doesn't matter, blind forces of nature, they just start making laws. And I know I'm being a little facetious there, but that's the ridiculousness that you have to go to when you start saying, well, these natural laws, they just happen. No, they don't, and we know that. Natural laws require a lawgiver, someone with the intelligence and the authority to be able to put those laws into action, first to define them and then to use them. And order requires something outside of chaos, powerful enough to impose upon that chaos or that chaotic system and organize it according to a fixed standard. Once again, we are necessarily requiring intelligence, authority, purpose, and design. Something that blind forces of nature have no right to claim for themselves. And once again, where did these forces come from? Newton's first law of motion says that an object at rest tends to stay at rest, and an object in motion tends to stay in motion with the same direction and speed. In other words, it doesn't change unless something outside of it changes it. And that's what I'm saying in principle about chaos. Chaos will remain chaos unless something intelligent and powerful enough outside of chaos intervenes and turns that chaos into organization. Evolution claims that this happened without an organizer. Basically, what we have then is a miracle, once again, without a miracle worker. But it's called science, not a miracle. Evolution claims that the Big Bang was an unfathomably big, huge explosion, which became chaos, of course, but then nanoseconds later, and I'm not kidding when I say that, nanoseconds later, the universe began organizing itself. Over time, it created its own galaxies, stars, planets. This is not scientific because it defies everything we know about science. Astronomers have seen stars die. We have never seen a star come into being. We have seen gases and nebulae and all these other things that they tell us are the seeds of new stars, but that's just them talking. They don't know that. They haven't seen that. They're only saying that because that fits with the theory of evolution. It doesn't prove evolution. It's only consistent with that. which again is very convenient, but not provable. In contrast to all that, God brings chaos into order by the power and the authority that he possesses as God. Think about it. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 through 3 here. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. God created. And the earth was formless and void. We could say the earth was chaos. And darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And then down in verse 9, God said, "Let the waters below and be gathered in one place. Let dry land appear." Down in verse 11, God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation." And then verse 14, God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of heavens," and so on and so on. You've read the account. In other words, what you see is it starts with chaos, but then a powerful being intervenes in that chaotic situation and turns it into organization. That's what we should expect. And that's what God does. That is not science, that is miraculous. But we have a miracle worker who is capable of doing that. And then from that, or within that system, God creates the science that is necessary to keep that system intact and moving in a very purposeful way. God brought order to the universe on purpose and for purpose. The creation account manifests a systematic, organized process for a very specific goal. We have this passage in Isaiah 45:18. I know it's not a landmark passage in itself to some, but nonetheless, it does state what we're talking about. The Lord who created the heavens, he is the God who formed the earth and made it. He established it and did not create it a waste place, but formed it to be inhabited. And he says, "I am the Lord, there is none else." God is a God of order and a God of purpose. Someone says, "It takes faith to believe in that God, though." Yes, it does. It takes far, far more faith to believe in evolution. The next thing we'll look at here is that complexity is claimed to come from simplicity. According to evolution, everything we see in the world and universe today began in raw, unorganized, simplest form. Over time and inexplicably, we see it becoming increasingly complex to the degree that it actually developed on its own without divine intervention and without a miracle, the human brain, capable of intelligent thought, capable of incredible computations, capable of intangible consciousness, and even capable of understanding science. All by itself. It all just happened, and it all came from things lesser and inferior to itself. So we have the raw basic elements becoming more and more complex to the point where we reach a complexity that is the best that we know in the universe. This idea violates everything we know to be true, everything that we have seen. It violates all scientific understanding. Complexity never comes from simplicity, but always from something more complex than itself. It is true that complexity can be broken down. We do see that direction. It can be broken down into simpler, more rudimentary parts. It's like breaking down Shakespeare into verses and then into words and then into letters. We can do that. We see that. There's no problem with that. But imagine letters by themselves, without any intervention, without any miracle happening at all, automatically, on their own, over eons of time, creating a work of Shakespeare. And that's really what you're looking at, is something that absurd and then being touted as scientific. One of the critical teachings of evolution is over time, blind forces of nature gave increasing intelligence, design, complexity, and order to the universe. A single-celled organism eventually became a multi-trillion-celled being called a human. And that means that blind forces of nature, for example, not only understood the concept of sight, even though they're blind, but also the sophisticated apparatus for capturing light and images and then interpreting that in a sophisticated device called a brain. You know that the eye and the brain are incredibly complex organs. And yet evolution says that they just happen over time. Deaf forces of nature not only understood the concept of sound before there was anything to capture sound, but then created the apparatus necessary for sound to be heard and then understood intelligently. When you start looking at it like that, then you start saying what I'm talking about. Okay, if the scientists and evolutionists have a good theory that is based on science, I'm all for it. Let's hear it. But if you're touting all this stuff as science, when it goes against everything we know to be true and everything that we know to be science, now we have a problem. In contrast to that, God gave man five senses and a living soul, and we have the explanation for our complexity in the world. A higher being than ourselves gave it to us. And someone says, well, that's a miracle, not scientific. Well, neither is evolution scientific. Belief in God is, however, rational, intelligent, and conclusive, given the evidence. There is no evidence to support evolution. There is zero evidence. The evolutionists, in rare moments of candor, will tell you that there's not a single shred of evidence that literally, specifically, and relevantly says that there is most certainly evolution. And then here's the thing that they always run to. Any textbook, any book on evolution will use this gimmick, I think. And that is that time solves everything. Evolution's solution to all problems in evolution is throw more time at it. Allegedly, over enormous periods of time, all contradictions of evolution are resolved. Over time, something can come from nothing. Over time, life can come from non-life. Over time, order can develop from chaos. Over time, complexity can come from simplicity. Time and natural selection are two of the lesser gods of evil. Evil. Evolution. Nature is the number one god of evolution. This kind of argument defies everything we know to be true and everything we've seen and all scientific laws as well. Evolutionists are using time as an explanation, yet what it attempts to explain is impossible to happen. It's like saying, okay, I've got this big, huge boulder, boom, you know, I'm going to put down here on the table, and I've got a theory that says that this boulder, over time, is going to turn into an intelligent human being. And you know that that's not going to happen. That's impossible for that to happen. My theory doesn't make the impossible more possible just because I really, really, really want the theory to work. That's what I'm trying to say, is that time, throwing more and more time at it, no matter how many eons of time I throw at that boulder, in the end, it's still a boulder, or something less than that anyway. Okay? It's not going to grow into something more than that. It's certainly not going to evolve into life and then higher life and then intelligent life. If something is impossible today, left to itself without any intervention, it will still be impossible 1,000 years from now, 100,000 years from now, a million, a billion years from now. It will still be impossible because time is not magic and time is not miraculous. A miracle is that which naturally and humanly cannot happen outside of supernatural intervention, no matter how much time is thrown at it. What evolution relies upon is miracles, but it doesn't want to call them miracles because that's not natural and it necessarily involves a miracle worker called God. And since we can't have God, therefore we can't have miracles. So any miraculous action has to somehow be encased in a complex, you know, discussion of science. In contrast, God stands above time and does not need physical time to do what he does or to perform as God. We're told in 2 Peter 3:8 that with the Lord, one day is 1,000 years, 1,000 years is one day. Don't take that too literal. All Peter's saying is that time doesn't matter to a timeless God. He doesn't need time in order to do what he does as God. He needed only 6 days to create all of the universe. You say, well, that can't be done. That's impossible. And I've had so many Christians even say, well, that can't be done. And he's talking about geological ages and epochs and everything. Is that right? Did you read the same account I read? He said 6 days. He could have done it in 6 minutes or 6 seconds if he wanted to. Because time doesn't matter with a timeless God. It doesn't matter. If he says he's doing it in 6 days and he has the power and authority to do so, to speak things into existence, well, then so be it. So I just want to list here what we've said so far this evening. We've only gone through five of the lies that we're going to cover, and we'll do the next five next Sunday night. But here's something that comes from nothing. Life comes from non-life. Order comes from chaos. Complexity comes from simplicity. Time solves everything. And this is being touted as scientific, factual, truth, and rational thinking. And I'm trying to tell you that what we're being fed here as a society and even as Christians in our different contexts in society, we are being fed a bunch of lies. Many people say it's not rational to believe in something supernatural. Well, that's a statement of opinion, not a statement of fact, because the fact is it's entirely rational to believe in the supernatural if and when sufficient evidence exists to support that premise. It is rational to believe in the supernatural if we have evidence that says that the supernatural does indeed exist. And given the premise of an all-powerful, all-knowing creator, the creation account is fully believable. There does exist sufficient evidence for this creator. And just because some or many people refuse to accept it doesn't make it any less true or real or arguable. In the passage that we had read as our scripture reading, John chapter 1, verse 1 through 10, Jesus was in the beginning with God. Jesus is God. He was the creator of everything that exists. He came into the world, and the world did not know him. That doesn't mean he didn't come. It means that the world didn't recognize him for who he was. When truth comes into the world, many people who are blind with lies and deception don't recognize truth when they see it. In contrast to that, not a single specific irrefutable proof has ever been offered to support evolution, and yet many people believe it anyway and label it as science. It is instead a dogma, a point of view or tenet, a belief, put forward as authoritative without adequate grounds. That's the Merriam-Webster definition of dogma. It is the gospel of Christ has adequate grounds for belief in it. Evolution does not have adequate grounds for belief in it. I have more to say on this subject, but we are out of time, and I appreciate you hearing me out. I know there's a lot of detail in these lessons, but nonetheless, we are trying to make a case here, and we are trying to show that evolution is not science, that God is more powerful than the arguments that are being put forward for a natural mechanical origin of life. I know this has not necessarily been a lesson to convince you of the gospel, but if there's anyone here that is ready to become a Christian, or wants the prayers of the congregation for their spiritual well-being, this would be your time to respond. Come forward if you need to as Dick leads us in song.